Hi, welcome to Dharma Threads. I'm Bande Sujata, and I'm here with Simon Power, and we're going to be discussing some verses from the Theragata, the verses of the senior monks, which you can read on Sutta Central. And for this session, we're going to be looking at verse number 1.18, Singala Pitu, right, the father of Singala. Here's the verse. There was an heir of the Buddha, a monk in the Bhesakala forest, who suffused the entire earth with the perception of bones. I think he will quickly abandon sensual desire. So, this is a somewhat unusual phrasing from the Theragata verses. A lot of the verses are more kind of direct, first-person descriptions of experience. And this is talking somewhat elliptically about this monk who... it's not really clear who they are or where they are. Is this Singala Pitu talking, or is it talking about Singala Pitu? It doesn't seem all that clear from the verse itself. But in any case, the main practice that's happening is clear enough, which is that the monk was sitting there in the forest doing the meditation, suffusing the entire earth with the perception of bones. So you have this idea in the Buddhist meditation, very, very prominent in the early Buddhist meditation texts of Adhyata Mahidha, in oneself and externally. So in oneself, in meditation, you look for the earth element, which is the properties of hardness within your own body, primarily, of course, within the bones, the teeth, and so on. And so by meditating inside, seeing that element internally, then you can also meditate externally. You see the same property is found externally. Of course, you know, the earth and the ground and rocks and so on are not identical with bones, right? This is obvious, but it still has that property of hardness and solidity to it. So that you can, having meditated internally, then you can look externally and you find that that same property that you see in your bones, you also see externally. This is that meditation practice that's being talked about here. And it's a kind of practice which actually is quite prominent in the early Buddhist texts, but you don't really hear it talked about much these days. And then the last line, also a little bit kind of unusual or a bit quirkier, I think he will quickly abandon sensual desire. So one of the purposes of this kind of meditation is that by deconstructing your body, by deconstructing that which we are attached to or attracted to, then we see actually it's just composed of elements, and these same elements that we see inside ourselves are also found externally. And there's nothing too much to get excited about. So this is one of the purposes of this practice. So it seems that somebody's commenting on the monk meditating, his diligence of his meditation, and then looking forward to seeing the results of it. So this is a little verse on the Singala Pitu. Simon, what was your response or reaction to this particular verse?
I think I chose this one because it seemed unusual from the rest of them, and because I also enjoy this practice, and also practicing the cemetery contemplations.
Yeah, yeah.
And it interested me, I think, in the commentary. In some of the commentaries to the text, that there's various meditations for various purposes, and they have various effects on people's minds. And focusing on death or the elements is meant to be one way to quickly abandon sensual desire.
Yeah.
So it interested me that even very early on in these early poems, there's this sense that the same purpose that meditation the poem suggests. So that's why I chose it. I really I like the idea, the visual imagery of this monk suffusing the entire earth with a perception of bones. And I suppose if you could do that well, then of course you'd come very quickly to realize that.
Right. You're living in this moment. You said you enjoyed doing that kind of meditation yourself. Have you ever done that, like where you've like literally sort of imagined the whole world as being like bones?
No, I've never done that. I've never contemplated that externally. I've only ever really done it internally for myself, or imagining myself dead. But I can see the benefits of this. And I could kind of see... I could see how you can apply it to everything. So perhaps in the end, you are just seeing, instead of these forms that we usually see in front of us, the inner workings, the things that are holding us up and preventing us from falling apart, and the things that remain after we're dead. I was just going to ask about the term the heir of the Buddha.
Okay.
Do you think this refers to a particular person or just to a member of the community of monks?
Yeah, the term of the dayado, heir, is again one of the very many terms which was sort of adopted in Buddhism and given a spiritual meaning. One of the suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya is called the Dhammadayada Sutta. And essentially what it does, it urges the monks to be heirs in the Dhamma, not heirs in material things. So it's easy enough as a monk to sort of come along and you join the monastery and you get to inherit the material things of the Buddha, right? Because people respect the Buddha and respect the Sangha, so you can stay in a nice monastery and get nice food and all of those kinds of things, and that can actually be quite pleasing and quite intoxicating in many ways. You know, you can begin to think that you somehow deserve to have all of those things because, you know, you're there as a monk or whatever. But the Buddha said, you know, this is not the purpose. You should be the heir of Dhamma. So the heir of the practice and the heir of letting go of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is when he's describing himself as the heir of the Buddha in that opening line, then that's what it means. He's a real spiritual heir of the Buddha.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very interesting poem.
Okay. Thanks so much, Simon.
Pleasure.
And thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next time.